Good morning and welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous AA meeting on air. My name is Steve and I'm an alcoholic. I will start our meeting with the Serenity Prayer. God
grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
The preamble of Alcoholics Anonymous. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength and hope with each other, that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We're self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organisation or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, and neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. Well, welcome to our meeting this morning. We have members of the fellowship in who'll be sharing their experience, strength and hope about their journey of recovery from alcoholism. And to start the sharing off this morning, Bob, do you want to share?
Yes, I'm Bob and an alcoholic.
Hi, Bob.
Hi, Bob.
I started drinking at the age of 14, and my first drink, in quotes, was a was six beers and half a bottle of bourbon. And I got sick, passed out, was taken home, and woke up with a terrible, terrible hangover the next morning. And the next weekend, I did the same thing again. And then after that, I generally drank too much whenever I drank. I couldn't stop. I had at the age of 19, I read a study about alcoholism that was put out by Princeton University, and I remember then realizing that I was an alcoholic. And I did absolutely nothing about it except Revlon, as far as I know. I continued to drink, always. After the first drink, I would think I'm going to be able to stop, and I never could. Things just sort of got terrible on the inside, but not on the outside. On the outside, I went through university and graduate studies, was by all appearances a normal person, except that I was cantankerous as hell. In the last few years of my drinking, I drank for 35 years. In the last few years of my drinking, although I had a house and a beautiful family and cars, I had a great job and I had just gotten a promotion, but I was thinking about killing myself. I have significant bouts of depression, and would think about killing myself. And in an off moment, I mentioned this to a friend who said, look, you drink too much, and that's probably the reason for it. Go to AA. And I went to an AA meeting, I remember, at noon, my first one. I just cold. I didn't know anything about AA. The first person who shared at the first meeting was an executive, actually, from the American Broadcasting Company. He had a jacket with that on, that name on it, and he shared about suicide, about wanting to commit suicide and coming into the program and how that had helped him. And so that, for me, was the beginning of a marvelous journey in AA, which has lasted a very long, well over 20 years. And the way it went is this. I wanted to leave the meeting early because a microphone was coming around to me, and I didn't want to share at that first meeting. And so I got up to leave, and an old-timer got up along with me and walked out with me and asked me if I was an alcoholic. Did I think I was an alcoholic? I said, yes, I know I'm an alcoholic. And he said, don't get a second opinion. And then he told me that meetings are what works. He said it's like an antibiotic. You need to you should go to 30 meetings at least before you make up your mind whether you want to do it or not. I went in the end to 90 meetings in 94 days, and I was hooked. And I never drank again. The way I did this, the way I accomplished this, not drinking again, first and foremost, it is one day at a time. You don't worry about the future. You don't worry about the past. You worry about staying sober right now, all the time. And I learned early about the four things: halt, hungry, angry, lonely, tired. I learned that when I'm hungry, all I want to do is drink. And in fact, I used not to to eat, because eating spoils the load. And so I would not eat. And I would, of course, isolate tremendously and then think, geez, I'm lonely, and I drink. And angry, I loved anger, and tired. And I'll throw in another one that really was a trigger for me, is self-pity. I would feel sorry for myself and think, well, this drink will fix this. And it always did in the short run. But as I said, in the end, the internals, I was in utter despair inside when I came into the meetings. But the saying in the meeting in AA is, meeting makers make it. And for me, it started with the meetings, and I went to meetings. I had a sort of a built-in sponsor to start with, a friend of mine who'd been in the program for 7 years before I came in, and he took me over. And the only thing he really stressed was the meetings. He made me write down the meetings I was going to go to for each month. And if I missed a meeting for sort of bullshit reasons, then he'd make me go to two to make it up. So I went to meetings regularly. I had that sponsor, but he then moved, went off to the middle of the U.S. in Chicago. And I got another sponsor who I had for 14 years. I picked him because we would walk out of a noon meeting together, which was near my work, and he would say to me after I'd share, "Bob, you're really smart. You're really smart." And it took me a while to realize that he was saying that I was being too smart for the program, that I had to be very careful. This is not a thinking man's cure. Don't think, don't drink, go to meetings is the saying, and it's correct. So I did go to meetings. I worked the steps several times, actually, I have, and I continually work the steps 6, 7 onward, just continually every day. I have to watch my character defects, and things got better after about 4 months. The compulsion to drink went away, and at 16 months, I remember, I finally got what it meant to live one day at a time, to live one day at a time, not just not drink one day at a time, but to live one day at a time. Don't project forward. You can plan, but you don't want to invest in the planning. You don't project forward. You don't look backward. You do a fourth and fifth step, and you do an eighth and ninth step on whatever you have to do, and that helps. From a from an individual point of view, I've gone from being just incredibly ill at ease. I dislike myself intensely, and other people dislike me with good reason. I've gone to a person I like myself. Other people like me. People who before used to say I was awful now say I'm very nice and kind. I've gotten a tremendous amount out of this program, and I have a saying that to people who are new, who come into the meetings, that you've landed in clover when you come into the meetings. I can't believe that I would ever say this, but I am pleased that I'm an alcoholic in AA. It's a very good way to live, and I am very, very happy. I look forward to each day. I know that if I don't drink, things are going to be better than they would be if I drank under any circumstances. Even if it's a terrible day, drinking would make it worse in two senses. First, the day itself would be worse. And secondly, for drinking and doping, if you're who we are, you simply cannot stop once you start. It was just a miracle, the God miracle for me, that I stopped for 16 hours or whatever it was before going to the AA meeting, and then I never took a drink after that. So I was lucky. And that should be about it, I guess. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Bob. You're with Alcoholics Anonymous on 104.6 Planet FM, and we have members of the fellowship on this morning sharing their experience, strength and hope about their journey of recovery from alcoholism. And the next person to share is Anthony. Do you want to share?
Oh, thanks for inviting me to share. I'm Anthony. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Anthony.
I had quite a strange relationship, I'd say, with alcohol. And I'm getting towards the end of my life, really, and I've retired. And I've been in the helping professions most of that life, and I sort of acquitted myself academically fairly well. And drinking has, particularly alcohol, has been a central feature for most of my life. And I never actually thought of myself as an alcoholic, but the regular drinking has been always something I thought I could manage. In fact, I used to sort of serenade alcohol. I used to make my own beer, and I used to make my own wine, sparkling mead wine. And I used to drink and would have sort of carousings, but it was never a major problem. Even when my son died, one of the reactions was to come back home and make a still. And I was quite successful in making all sorts of liqueurs. And it wasn't until when I was sampling one of these, I had a blackout, that I realized that there was something possibly wrong with that. And in spite of the warning, I really took no notice in continuing to drink. So As I may have said, I'm 3 months sober, and it's the longest I've been without a drink for just about my entire life. And it wasn't until I retired that I came home, and the bottle of wine was in the fridge, and I started to drink a bottle of wine, and then in the morning I'd have a beer, and then I'd sort of reason my way around that maybe I could have a beer earlier in the morning and it wouldn't count. And I suddenly realized I was slipping quietly towards the grave in a sort of a semi-intoxicated state. And I had a sort of wake-up call. And because I had attended Alcoholics Anonymous as a sort of a look-in, I realized all of a sudden that that's what I needed to do. So I went to the AA meetings. And I've attended just about every day for the last 3 months, and it's been an extraordinary wake-up call. I used to pride myself in being able to understand almost all the theoretical positions that therapy uses, being in the therapy field and having therapy myself. And almost all of those explanations for our difficulties and problems have been oriented around some theoretical explanation of one sort or another, be it Freudian or psychiatric or whatever it is. And I used to pride myself in being able to understand just about all these theoretical undertakings. But it wasn't until I landed up in AA and I suddenly realized that this had nothing to do with it. And it was something about being there, that we're all in here together, and it was extraordinarily healing, and that there was no explanation and no judgment at all from anybody, and we were sort of all in together. And it was the spiritual part for me, because I'd been hunting for the quote answer for most of my life, but through a fug of alcohol, which I mistook euphemistically as the spirit, which it obviously wasn't. So in attending these meetings, the complete non-judgmental, and people would have all sorts of explanations of why they were, but it was just the fact of being there with other people like myself. And I began to realize my problems, obviously, were that I thought I knew too much about it, and I would all go overseas and listen to all these experts overseas, but none of that made any difference whatsoever. It was attending the AA meetings. And the meetings say they have a a spiritual sort of aspect. But the spiritual aspect for me is the meetings themselves and the knowledge that when you're in the meeting and you're sharing the difficulties and problems of one's life, that's what's there. And it's something about the honesty of these meetings where you just say what's present. And the only person that you'll be lying to if you lie is yourself. So you're confronted with yourself every time you go to a meeting, and everybody looks at each other and knows this, and we're all in this together. And that's extraordinarily healing. And I realized most of my life, when I had thought I knew things, I would take to the bottle to try and see if I could think better with alcohol. And of course, it was completely the reverse, that it actually fuzzed up my thinking and had done for God knows how many years. And it also explained areas in my life that I was continually worrying about, as you do when you retire and you reviewing your life and where you, the difficulties that one has had encountered. And that's been an ongoing lesson for me. And that's really why I come to AA. And it's been an extraordinary blessing just to be in the meetings and listening to other fellow alcoholics. And I began to realize that I am an alcoholic. This is what alcoholism does. It clouds your thinking. It clouds relationships. And you become unable to see what's right in front of you. So that's my story.
Thanks, Anthony. The program of Alcoholics Anonymous is outlined in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'll read Chapter 5, which outlines the program, how it works. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Those who do not recover are people who cannot or will not completely give themselves to the simple program. Usually men and women who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. There are such unfortunates. They are not at fault. They seem to have been born that way. They are naturally incapable of grasping and developing a manner of living which demands rigorous honesty. Our chances are less than average. There are those too who suffer from grave emotional and mental disorders, but many of them do recover if they have the capacity to be honest. Our stories disclose in a general way what we used to be like, what happened, and what we are like now. If you've decided you want what we have and are ready to go to any lengths to get it, then you are ready to take certain steps. At some of these we balked. We thought we could find an easier, softer way, but we could not. With all the earnestness at our command, we beg of you to be fearless and thorough from the very start. Some of us have tried to hold on to our old ideas, and the result was nil until we let go absolutely. Remember that we deal with alcohol, cunning, baffling, and powerful. Without help, it is too much for us, but there is one who has all power. That one is God. May you find him now. Half measures availed us nothing, and we stood at the turning point. We asked his protection and care with complete abandon. Here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. 1. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol and that our lives had become unmanageable. 2. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3. Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. 4. Made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5. Admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6. We're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7. Humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. 8. Made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9. Made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10. Continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. And 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Many of us exclaimed, "What an order, I can't go through with it." Do not be discouraged. No one among us has been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles. We are not saints. The point is that we are willing to grow along spiritual lines. The principles we have set down are guides to progress, and we claim spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection. Our description of the alcoholic and the chapter to the agnostic and our personal adventures before and after make clear three pertinent ideas. A, that we were alcoholic and could not manage our own lives. B, that probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism. C, that God could and would if he was sought. It's a reading out of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous under the chapter How It Works, outlining the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. So continue with our meeting and our sharing portion of the meeting. Vic, would you like to share?
thanks, Steve. My name is Vic and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Vic.
Yes, I heard a reference to the spirit being taken as an early solution to life's pressures and problems. I met my higher spirit when I was 14, but it wasn't Casper the Ghost. It was Ethyl Alcohol, and I fell in love with her from the very start, you know. She made me feel like I was falling in love every time I took half a glass of gin mixed with a tiny bit of orange juice or something like that. It was just a wonderful getting carried away feeling, you know. It made me more glib and talkative. I was clever, you know. I could smile and be pleasant. I wasn't afraid of other people. And I even got a personality out of it, which allowed me a certain niche in my high school as the senior class alcoholic. And looking back on it, I think it must have been insane that my parents gave me a 16-year-old permission to buy a Ford convertible. And we had a lot of adventures in that summer before I went to university. Few fender benders as well. It always involved alcohol. I left the car at home when I went to university, and I continued drinking there. They had beer busts and panty raids and all this, that, and the other. You know, it was fraternity party, animal house kind of a lifestyle. It suited me particularly well because I thought I was very smart and could continue on with my studies, which I did reasonably well. Then just move on out into society and be like everyone else. I was living a double life, though, by then. I did graduate and got a job in San Francisco at an ad agency, and that was kind of like graduate school for me, because after work we'd go down to the Devil's Playground and drink until 7-8 o'clock at night. I wasn't bothered with that at all. I drank a lot. I got a DUI in San Francisco. I would forget where I parked my car, and it would turn up somewhere eventually, you know. The police would call me and let me know, or the wrecker's yard, or whatever it happened to be. I thought things would finally settle down when I got married. I met a girl. She said she loved me. We got married. The problems continued. She was indulgent and let me drink as much as I liked, and I realized that there was a problem now. So I thought maybe the problem was basically America. So 50 years ago, I immigrated to New Zealand. Of course, I brought my alcoholism with me. Ethel came along. And in the end, I was living two completely different lives. I was a normal, everyday sort of a person from Monday to Friday because I had a public job. And it meant I had to be on my toes. And then on the weekends or holidays, I would just cut loose and go on 3 or 4 day benders. The marriage finally fell apart, but Ethel was still with me. And fortunately, that was the beginning of a 10-year period of reasonable temperance. I won't say sobriety, because that wasn't really the way it was. I loved a woman more than I loved Ethel. And she didn't like me to drink, so I didn't. Eventually, sometime later, I lost her. We have a lovely daughter, but I was back on my own, and of course, I started drinking again. That drinking continued off and on for the better part of 40 years. Finally, I retired just like Tony was saying, and I had a lot of time on my hands, and that's when the drinking started in really heavy. I got to the point where I wound up in the hospital twice. Second time, the doctor said, after they'd done the blood tests and the rest, you are a very sick man, and you're not going to live much longer if you keep up the drinking the way that you're doing. We see the liver damage. We see all this damage. I said, I don't know what to do. I can't stop. And that was the truth. I couldn't stop anymore. I drank in the middle of the night. I drank in the morning. I waited till 10 a.m. at countdown, you know. I used to tell people I come from a long line of alcoholics, but the line thins out after 10 o'clock when the store opens. At any rate, I said to the doctors, I don't know what to do, and they suggested AA. Well, I came into AA, and they said all the earnestness at our command, we beg of you to be fearless and thorough from the very start. Well, there was a big sign on the wall about honesty, and I thought, yeah, I have not been honest with myself. And I did what they said. I was completely defeated. I had reached what they call rock bottom, and they said I'd been given the gift of desperation. I heard one guy say, I had nothing to lose. Oh, I had something to lose, all right. Only thing I had left was my life. So I went to every meeting for every day for a year. Fortunately, I was close to the room that had one meeting every day. And I just shut up and listened. And I realized that alcohol was only the first problem. The second and most major problem was my self-centeredness. You know, the whole world revolved around me. They said that we needed to let loose of our old ideas. And I thought, well, my old idea was that I can't drink and that I can drink and get away with it. Actually, the drinking was just a small bit. The main idea was mostly all of the ideas that I had in my mind. The drinking had just accelerated my self-centeredness, my bombacity, my obnoxiousness, all these things. When I heard other people tell their stories, I realized these people are just like me. They come from backgrounds like me, not what they did, but emotionally what they felt when they were young. I could really relate to these people, and I thought, you guys and girls, you are okay. You look like normal, everyday people. And you've got one good jobs and this, that, and the other. You settle down. Some of you have even 5, 10, even 20 years of sobriety. And you're all moderately happy. How can I have a life without alcohol? What will happen to me when they pull the hole out of the donut or whatever? And I just kept going. You know, they said, keep coming back. And I'll tell you, I've been in the program for a few years now, and my life is completely different. It's the ideas that I used to have about drinking. You know, I don't fear alcohol. I just respect what it could do to me. It could bring me right down to the bottom really fast. I know that I'm not sort of getting back to square one by not drinking, and I know that the best thing that I can do, apart from going to meetings, is engage myself in service. So I try and work to help other alcoholics. I give to my sponsees what my sponsor gave to me, which was a new way of living. I can't say that I've been rocketed into the fourth dimension, but speaking from a physics point of view, the fourth dimension is time. And now I have time, and I enjoy it. I appreciate it, but only 24 hours at a slug. And I, like one of the previous speakers, don't make detailed plans. I make flexible proposals for what I'm going to do every day. And every night when I go to bed, I think to myself, well, I did about half of what I wanted to do. And it makes me feel pretty good because I really enjoy service to other people. They saved my life. I thank you very much.
Thanks, Vic.
Thanks.
You've been with Alcoholics Anonymous on 104.6 Planet FM. If you've identified with our speakers and you'd like to do something about your drinking, you can log on to aa.org.nz, and in the drop-down box it'll give you a list of all the meetings in the Greater Auckland area. Or you can phone 0800 AA Works, and this will put you in contact with an AA member. We'll be back here again next Sunday at 10:45 on 104.6 Planet FM with Alcoholics Anonymous AA meeting on air. And we'll close our meeting with the Serenity Prayer.
God, Grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.